Facebook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, September 18th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me as we keep this Bang the Book Radio train running down the tracks here. Two guests will join me on today's program. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, where we'll chat some NFL Week 3 overreactions, adjustments, all those types of things. Then we'll take a look at Bengals, Panthers, Broncos, Ravens, and Bills, Vikings. Then we'll also take a look at the Tour Championship, since now I apparently know when that event is actually going to start, and that will be Thursday this week. So we'll take a look at that with Brian here to wrap up that segment. Second half of today's show, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com will join me. We've got college football and NFL coming up in that segment. We'll take a look at some of the adjustments that he's made for both the NFL and college football. Talk about a whole bunch of games along the way with him as well. Over at BangTheBook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Comprehensive Westgate Super Contest coverage. Just posted our recap article over there this morning. We are tied for first in the Super Contest Gold at 7-2-1. A bad week for me in the traditional Super Contest at 1-4, but our other Bang the Book entry in the traditional Super Contest going 3-2. So a mixed bag overall for us in the Super Contest, but a good showing in the Super Contest Gold here so far. That is our collaborative entry. We're off to a very good 7-2-1 start with that. So you can check out our Super Contest recap over at bangthebook.com. My MLB picks and tips piece is updated. My college football and NFL opening line reports are both posted. College football power ratings are up. New set of tennis previews from Big Ten Watto for the two events here this week. So we've got you fully covered over at bangthebook.com, including our sports book reviews. And as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, where you can sign up using that Bang100 promo code and get that 100% bonus for BetDSI, where it's only a game until you bet it. Also get involved in our free pick contest that we have over at bangthebook.com as well. Lots and lots of stuff going on over there. Make sure that you check it all out, because I guarantee you will find a lot of resources to help you for the NFL, college football, NBA, and NHL seasons coming up very quickly here as well. We've got you covered for those leagues also. Two guests coming your way here on the program today. The first, Mr. Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Good morning, Adam. How you doing, buddy?
Doing very well. Appreciate your time here as always, sir. And, you know, we're going to talk about the NFL and golf here on this segment. But I got to say, you know, training camp, exhibition games for the NHL, you got to be chopping at the bit for this thing to get going.
Adam, I found a new favorite thing. My new favorite thing is betting preseason hockey. It sounds like such a degenerate thing, but it's unbelievable. When you sit there, the first game the other night, the Golden Knights are playing with their fourth and fifth string goaltenders at home in a place where they're just going out of their minds, and the total was 6, 7-2 was the final score. The game went over in the first couple of minutes of the second period. Last night, Buffalo's at Columbus plus $1.40, and Buffalo's using their 1A goaltender, Omark, against the Blue Jackets. And I'm looking at the Blue Jackets roster, and there were two guys on there that I'd even ever heard of. And Buffalo's plus $1.40. They won 4-1. Now, there are no numbers up for the games tonight. But if they put them up, Pittsburgh is playing at Buffalo. Buffalo's playing back-to-back nights. None of the guys went to Columbus, and Buffalo's using their starting goaltender tonight against Yari, and the Gensel is about the only name Modest playing, and Buffalo's throwing their entire defensive core, Eichel, Skinner, Okposo at them in the first game that Rasmus Dahlin is going to play at home, and people will be going nuts for it. And I'm sitting here counting the seconds, hoping that they put Pittsburgh up $1.30 favorite. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's like you talk about all of a sudden finding, like, you know, ridiculous opportunities with bad numbers on the board. It's NHL preseason hockey.
Well, there you go. And, you know, you've talked about a lot of really good angles for the NHL regular season, and now you're hitting on preseason. So, you know, hey, you know what? I don't care how you make your money here in this business, but as long as you're making money, that's the thing. I don't care what the perception is of betting NHL preseason. If there's value to be had, and certainly it seems like you've found some, I recommend all of our listeners check that out because, you know what, I have no shame. I mean, if there's opportunity, if there's value, take it. So good for you for finding that, and good luck with things as the preseason continues.
In the past, those numbers have never been on the board. I honestly don't remember seeing NHL preseason games. And last night, every game that was played around the NHL was on the board. Now this morning, there's nothing there. Now I don't know if this is going to continue, and as the morning goes on, they're going to, you know, start putting these things up. And there's nothing that's like, you know, immortal locks, but it's almost like they're looking at it and based on the standings from last year, hanging a number. You know, but then they would look, oh, well, the Sabres played last night. Well, but none of the guys that are playing tonight went to Columbus because you got 80 guys that are in camp now.
Yeah, for sure. And, of course, you know, these are lower limit things, obviously. I'm sure the offshores aren't taking a whole lot of money on them. I'm sure it's kind of hard to find books that have them out there in Vegas as well. Maybe not with, you know, with the Golden Knights and all that now. But
well, that's it. That's it, Adam. You nailed it. I mean, because of the Golden Knights and the popularity of hockey, all of a sudden I almost fell over. Like every preseason NHL game was on the board last night. Almost fell over. I've like never seen it before.
Well, certainly hope that you can keep that train going. And of course, especially now with the first few preseason games, as we get, you know, deeper into the preseason, a lot of the guys on two-way contracts will be playing, or a lot of the starters. But now you've got, you know, guys that you're just taking a look at, guys that they haven't reassigned to minor league camp yet. So definitely some opportunities there to be sure. All right, let's talk NFL because there are a lot of opportunities here in the betting market for this week as well. You know, we talk about week one to week two kind of being overreaction week. There were a few of those that were out there. Some people picked off Oakland being one of them. Detroit got in the back door. They were a little bit of an overreaction as well. Maybe the Indianapolis-Washington game would classify, and the Colts wind up winning that game outright. Brian, as you look at the board here for week three, do you see any games that really dramatically stand out as overreaction types of lines?
Well, I know we discussed last week the Indianapolis game specifically, that there were games that some teams got credit for what they did, and then other teams, like the odds makers, thumbed their nose at them. And we said, watch the Thursday night game. If Cincy plays good against Baltimore, it will flatter Indianapolis, and it did. And then Washington played what we then saw to be a horrible Arizona team. So, yeah, I mean, that's almost that horse racing mentality, Adam, and I do apply that in a lot of facets of sports handicapping, and it's like, you know, class and the company you keep and common frames of references. It doesn't work blindly, but I think it leads you in the right direction. So that would be my little statement here today is if you see common opponents, obviously, there's scheduling and travel and other things that go into it. But use those cross frames of references and say, hey, look, these two teams played the same team. Here's how they played against them. And there are times where something sticks out like a sore thumb and points you in the right direction.
Yeah, to be sure. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, this is a pretty interesting week in the NFL because last week, you know, I talked about this on yesterday's show. We had a handful of turnovers in last night's Monday Night Football game. But, you know, overall, the number of turnovers did decrease pretty significantly here from week one to week two. Penalties still very high. But quarterbacks last week were phenomenal in the NFL. Cumulative passer rating for all quarterbacks, this is from Gil Brandt on Twitter, 102.6. That is a new record in the NFL for a single week. In fact, it absolutely blew away the previous record, 94.8, back in week 10 of 2010. So, probably going to see some overreactions here from a total standpoint. And, of course, the quarterbacks that really shined last week, like a Pat Mahomes, you know, these guys are going to have an inflated perception here, not just this week, but probably going forward as well.
I mean, well, that game specifically, Kansas City, 54.5, it's up to 56, which is a ridiculously high total for an NFL game. But to your point on quarterback ratings and some of the things we're seeing, it's only a couple of weeks, Adam, but again, don't forget the majority of these players didn't play in the preseason. I mean, these teams did not play as a team in the preseason. And I think what we're seeing, how do you play defense in this day and age in the NFL? I mean, these guys are so up against it, be it the personal fouls and the helmet hits. But I think what you're seeing is the run after catch yardage. I'd love to see those numbers, the yak numbers in the first two games compared to the first two games last year. These defenders are coming up, and the tackling is horrible. And I think what's going on is the defenders are literally coming in, and as fast as the NFL is, if you hesitate, you're a dead man walking. And I think that these guys, not only when they're coming up to make a tackle, they're thinking about, how do I make the tackle? they're like, I don't want to get flagged for the way I make the tackle. So it's like they're thinking about how to tackle guys. And guys, the tackling is brutal. I mean, the yards after catch is ridiculous.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a funny thing, too, because I kind of went on a rant yesterday during our segment with Kyle Hunter about the Ohio State defensive scheme and about the angles that some of the guys in their back seven, the linebackers and the defensive backs, were taking to the ball carrier in that game against TCU. And that's the thing that's tough for me to figure out about the NFL right now is it because of the rules package, or is it just because of the way that we're trying to develop these college football players? There's not a whole lot of fundamental form tackling in college football. There's really not a whole lot of great angle play. And that's why you see so many explosive plays now in college football, so many long touchdown plays, because these guys don't know how to take angles to the ball. I don't know if these defensive coaches just aren't talking about those types of things, but there are a lot of things that have been going on in the college game over the last 3-4 years that have carried over to the NFL side of things. Then you factor in these rules where you can't really hit anybody. And so that's what you get. You get a lot of these explosive plays, yards after catch, like you're mentioning. So, you know, this could just be one of those years, and this could be the start of a trend where, you know, look, in that San Francisco Kansas City game, this would be only the 32nd game with a total of 55 or higher since 2010. And as you mentioned, it's going up. And I think that may be kind of a precursor for what we see throughout the rest of the season here, at least until the weather starts to get really bad and we get snow and wind and things like that.
Yep. No, there's no doubt. And then I guess to your previous question about, you know, what numbers kind of stick out at you in week 3, the situations really dictate a lot. Historically, we know teams that are 0-2, 87% of the time, I think has always been the number, miss the playoffs. So there's that sense of motivation. And the two I would look at very early in the week, you know, the odds of Ryan Fitzpatrick being the MVP of the NFL were 25 million to 1, and now he's the front runner. But it's 2 weeks, and we've seen this before. I think Pittsburgh comes in on the Monday night game with a real sense of motivation, only laying 1.5, 2, and you got Antonio Brown chirping. The total's gone up 3.5 points, but I would look for Pittsburgh to be kind of a cornered rat here. And the other one would be Seattle at home. So they lose to the Bears. I had the under in that game last night, and it was a gravy train, and then it turned into a bleeding ulcer with 28 points in the fourth quarter, but it stayed under by 1.5 points. But I would look at Seattle 0-2. They lose by a field goal at Denver, and then the game last night where Khalil Mack was on a tear. And people think that Seattle's window's closed, but it's closing. Completely closed. I think it'd be too early to do that just yet. But know this. This number was 3. It's down to 1. Seattle's favored. It's their home opener. And they're a cornered rat with an 0-2 record. Historically, that's now in recent years the toughest place to play. And honestly, I look at Dallas. Dallas can't score. Dallas has defined problems in the red zone. They have no big wide receivers, and the tight end's not getting it done without Witten there. They've got to run it in. They've got to line up and run it in. That's how Dallas is going to put the end zone. We said it before the season. We've seen it through the first two games. I think Dallas could be walking into a buzzsaw in that late game Sunday at Seattle.
It's an interesting point you bring up about that look-ahead line being 3 for that Dallas and Seattle game. We've also seen an adjustment to the Chicago-Arizona game, which the look-ahead line was 4 in the offshore market. Now that one's up to 6, some places showing 6.5. Dallas actually opened a 1-point favorite at bookmaker in that game against Seattle once they posted their adjusted number after Monday Night Football. Now, as you mentioned, Seattle -1 in that spot. So, definitely seeing those overreactions, definitely seeing some of those adjustments that need to be made. Let's touch on 3 games here, and we'll see if we see any types of adjustments or overreactions in these. Beginning with game 463-464, Cincinnati and Carolina. We're seeing Cincinnati money here so far. This number +3 with extra juice on the Bengals. The books really trying to dig in at 3. They don't want to move off of 3 early in the week here. So we're seeing some plus money and even money on Carolina as the favorite. Obviously, the state of North Carolina could use a little bit of a boost after everything that Hurricane Florence has done there from a flooding standpoint. So maybe a little bit of extra incentive, a little bit of extra engagement here for Carolina this week. I'm a little bit surprised to see money hitting the board on Cincinnati with Joe Mixon out for the Bengals.
Yeah, and obviously they can go with Bernard, and it would probably change their game plan, figure that Dalton's going to be throwing it all over the place. The one thing, the cautionary tale I would throw out, the good news for Cincinnati is they played a Thursday game, so they get extra rest and time to prepare. But it's going to be our first look at, get Cincinnati. They wanted Indy. I think going into Carolina is a little bit of a different animal. And with Mixon out, if Cincy is one-dimensional, I think that could prove problematic. Not a game I'd be really looking to get involved in. I think there's just too many questions for me. But the Mixon thing makes me think possibly you look over the total, that it could be one of these games where Cincy's going to be throwing it all over the place.
Yeah, and of course, for Carolina, lots of injuries on the offensive line still. Khalil and Williams both out. Trey Turner was out with a concussion last week. You still don't have Thomas Davis because he's serving the suspension. So for Carolina, a lot of injuries as well. So that is one of those games I think is pretty tough. And we do see, again, like I said, a little bit of Cincinnati money here early in the week, but the books really trying to dig in with that 3, not move off of that number here early in the week. So let's go to
Those are good points you make on the offensive line, but in a weird way, that's a situation that wouldn't hurt the Panthers as much as it would hurt 90% of the league because, A, you've got the mobile quarterback, and not that that doesn't mean you can't hit him, and he's not a crash test dummy at times with Newton. But with McCaffrey, they throw swing passes to him, and it's like a controlled running game. So even if that offensive line is struggling, they say, well, they're not going to be able to run the ball. Well, those little swing passes to McCaffrey are like controlled running plays. It's a little swing pass and get them out in space. So I think Carolina can still function even if they're hurting with the offensive line just because of the tool that McCaffrey is.
The thing about Carolina that's so hard for me to figure out, North Turner running Cam Newton 13 times in week 1 against Dallas, and part of that was because the offensive line wasn't great. Newton only runs 5 times in week 2 for 42 yards, was sacked a couple times, but that's the thing. And he also took a very vicious, very dirty shot from DeMonte Casey in that game. That's the thing, though, with Carolina is you have to kind of walk this fine line here where Cam Newton is probably your second best offensive player, if not your best offensive player outside of McCaffrey. But also, it's week 3. This guy's got 18 carries already. He's been hit several times because the offensive line is in such a state of flux. At what point, for Carolina here, do you sort of try to figure out something different to do to the point where you don't get your franchise quarterback killed in week 3? I don't know what the answer to that question is with the injured offensive line, but, with this Cincinnati pass rush and, of course, the reputation that Cincinnati has as a defense, a little bit worried about Cam Newton here in this game this week.
Well, long-term survival is certainly cause for concern, what you said. But I would give Carolina some credit here. They win that opening game over Dallas. They went into Atlanta, a division foe, who was playing in their home opener of trying to avoid going 0-2, which is a death knell for most teams, and they only lost by a touchdown. So even though they lost that game, I think there were some good things to take away from it for Carolina, and Actually, the more I think about it, Carolina would be the side for me.
All right, let's go to game 469, 470 here. Denver and Baltimore, obviously we all know what Baltimore did to Buffalo in week one. Then they go on the road, lose at Cincinnati on Thursday night on a short week with a quick turnaround. Now they've got extra rest to welcome the Denver Broncos, who make that long trip from the Mile High City out to the East Coast. Brian, I got to be honest with you. This number opened 4.5. It's up to 5. I'm surprised we're not up to 6 yet. I really am.
Yeah, it's the travel that's the issue here. I still have questions about Baltimore. They rolled Buffalo, but basically that's the order of the day in the NFL now, seeing a 16.5-point line for the Bills going to Minnesota. But I still think Baltimore's one of these teams. They've got more weapons, but they're still a team, to me, Adam, moves the ball between the 20s and Tucker kicks it through the uprights. And Denver's going with a running back by committee. And now Keenum's taking his act on the road. I'd be leaning under in this game.
It's hard for me to evaluate Denver here because, they were the better team against Seattle. They won the box score, should have covered that game. But we found out last night, and of course we kind of already knew this about Seattle anyway, they're not a very good team. Then Denver comes out. They're down 12-0 to Oakland in the first half. They wind up winning that game late with a last-second field goal, 20-19. I don't think Denver's very good. And like you, I don't know about Baltimore fully either, but I'm a little bit surprised that we don't see this number moving up because perception's pretty low on the Raiders, perception's low on the Seahawks. Those are the two wins for Denver. Maybe Cincinnati's a little bit better of a team than we thought with them off to a 2-0 start. So I'm just surprised this number is not – pointing upward as much as it is right now. But I also agree with you in the sense that, if you're asking Baltimore to cover a big number, and 6 in the NFL is still a big number, you've got to get something out of Joe Flacco, something out of their red zone trips that's more than Justin Tucker kicking field goals. So, this is going to be an interesting line to watch as we get closer to kickoff, I think.
Well, and also it's a dead number. When you're in that 4.5-5 range, this thing could whammo ball back and forth between the professional money and the general public. This could go up to 5.5. It may get to 6. Then it'll come back on game day. Once you're in that dead zone, I think this thing has a chance to teeter totter back and forth a little bit.
Well, Brian, I hate to do this to you here, but we got to talk about game 477, 478, Buffalo and Minnesota. This number is 17 out there in the betting market. I ran the query over at killersports.com to look at 2 touchdown or higher favorites. So 14-point favorites since 2014. In those games, the favorite is 20-0 straight up and 16-4 against the spread. We typically think about big numbers in the NFL being something that you want to stay away from. But when you get these huge favorites of 2 touchdowns or more, they do take care of business. Again, 16-4 against the spread, 20-0 straight up. Doesn't look good for the Bills this week.
Well, certainly it doesn't. And there's a lot of things going on here. The Bills cannot run the football. McCoy's got rib injuries. Actually, the kid Marcus Murphy, if he plays, he's actually pretty good. And might even against this defense, might have his moments. Kid's a good little player. But Buffalo's wide receivers, forget the quarterback. The point of it, Peterman was horrific. Allen is running around, running for his life. On top of it, nobody's open. They have no wide receivers. It's just a dog's breakfast there. Now, it's a professional football team, and the Vontae Davis nonsense, could be a thing in the room where, these guys get all ticked off and shock you and show up with a really good effort. And the only thing in Buffalo's favor is Minnesota's playing the Rams next week. If Minnesota just shows up and thinks it's a cakewalk, that's the only thing that keeps this thing under 60, it keeps them from covering the number. Thielen and Diggs are, so good. And that defense, I'd be hard-pressed to see Josh Allen have any kind of success. Only thing is if Minnesota thinks this is a walk in the park is the only thing that keeps this under 17.
Well, and like I said here, the favorites 16 out of 20 in games with their 14-point favorite or higher. I will say this, though. This is the second lowest total of those 20 games that I'm talking about here. The previous low total was 39. That was a Thursday night game. Rams and Seahawks in that one. That was a 24-3 win for Seattle. So they did cover the number. Game stayed under the total. This total up a little bit from 40.5 to 41. But again, low total, huge spread. We know what people generally want to do with those games. We'll see how this one works out. But like I said, the big favorites have laid the lumber in the NFL over the last four seasons when they've been supposed to. So, Brian, we'll transition over to the golf side of things here for a couple of minutes. And my apologies, because I didn't realize that there was a week off between the previous event and the Tour Championship here. So kind of put you on the spot last week. I was talking as if it was coming up that Thursday. I guess I just got used to the week-after-week format there with the PGA Tour. But the Tour Championship is this week at Eastlake Golf Club. Your video up over on our YouTube page, our Bang the Book YouTube page. So for our listeners, make sure that you check that out. Now that you've had some more time to digest the course, digest the odds, and again, my apologies for putting you on the spot last week, anything change in terms of your handicap for this one?
No, I swear I'm all about Tiger Woods this week. I really am. There's only 30 guys playing. And the last few weeks, Tiger Woods' problem has always been hitting the fairway. He's driving the ball unbelievably now. And the other Rubik's Cube for this event is the purse for this event is $9 million. I don't know. The winner probably gets $1.5 million, $1.6 million, something like that. But the $10 million pot of gold is the FedEx Cup. So there are going to be guys, the top five, that can flat out just sit and win this thing are DeChambeau, Rose, Finau, Dustin Johnson, and Justin Thomas. It's simple. If they win this tournament, they win the FedEx Cup. Other than that, there are all kinds of crazy, quirky scenarios in terms of where guys finish and who wins the FedEx Cup. So if a long shot's leading the event and you've got a Justin Thomas or a DeChambeau, instead of going for the win, they're looking at the leaderboard and DeChambeau saying, well, that guy can't win the FedEx Cup that's leading the tournament now, and I'm in second, and this guy's two shots behind me, and all I got to do is beat him to win the FedEx Cup. Here you get the guy who's in second, who's normally flag hunting, is shooting at the middle of greens because he's protecting the guy who's in sixth place. So, you know what I mean? It's not just, hey, let's go win a golf tournament. They're looking at the scoreboard and massaging the way they're playing based on, hey, how do I win the FedEx Cup, not this tournament? That being said, at 12-1 in a shortened field, I think this is the week the Tiger Woods gets back on the beam and wins an event.
Yeah, Tiger Woods, you can find, I think I see him about plus 1450 or so in the offshore market. There may be better numbers than that, but I'm only looking at five dimes right now. Rory McIlroy has been bet into the favorite for this thing at five dimes, plus 775. I believe he was the second favorite previously. Justin Rose was the favorite when the odds opened up for this thing. But that's such an interesting move to me with Rory McIlroy because we know how much emphasis Rory puts on the Ryder Cup. They don't have a week off before the Ryder Cup. Everyone's going to head over to France right after the Tour Championship here, get ready for that thing to get started. So I'm a little bit surprised to see the move on Rory, but then again, when you're talking about $10 million for winning the FedEx Cup, I guess that's going to keep everybody engaged.
Right, but McIlroy's dropped all the way to number 17. And, you know, for him, you know, he needs to win the event and have Bryson DeChambeau finish 11th or worse. So the FedEx Cup is likely out of the equation for McIlroy, but we know he can play this course. Xander Schauffele is another guy. He won this event last year. I think those guys that are out of it are kind of freewheeling. They're just going to try to win the event. They're going to try to cash a ticket here because the FedEx Cup is dead and gone to them. So for McIlroy, that same scenario is in play here. I don't think he can win the FedEx Cup with the combinations he needs. But McIlroy also, to get his game tuned up for the Ryder Cup, is a great angle. I can see it. The why money's come in on him. He's played well at the course. hey, there's only 30 of them, Adam. And, you know, the interesting thing with technology and the way things stack up now, you have in-progress wagering that I think there's a real opportunity on Sunday with live wagering, in-progress wagering on this, based on where guys stand. And you look for odds to win that event, and you'll sit there and say, this guy's just going to be protecting his position to win the FedEx Cup. I think you're going to find some value and some overlaid prices on Sunday with guys. It might not be like one of the really big name players, but this is a guy that's sitting there, and he's going to be flag hunting. He's the guy who's going to be going for it. You might find some juicy prices in game on Sunday.
Well, we'll definitely make sure that we talk about the Ryder Cup next week on this segment with Brian Blessing of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how can people find those two fine programs that you do?
It's on sportsbookradio.com. All the shows are archived there. Adam, it's on kshp.com and the app, KSHP Las Vegas. You can follow me on Twitter. The shows are noon to 2 specific time, Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. And things really heating up on the hockey front. It was a short summer away from hockey here. That's the one thing when the team you're covering goes to the finals, Adam, it's a short summer, bud. I mean, it's like it just ended.
Yes, sir. Most definitely is. Make sure you check out the two videos that Brian did for us over on our Bang the Book YouTube page. One with a look at week 3 in the NFL. The other with a look at the Tour Championship here this week. And follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Blessing. Brian, appreciate your time. As always, thank you so much, sir. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, always a pleasure, buddy. Have a great week.
Good stuff there. As always, from Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. We got one more guest coming your way here on this Tuesday edition of the program. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
Going great, Adam. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining me as always here. Great to get you back on the program. And let's go ahead and dive right in with week 3 of the NFL season here. You know, we talk about all the turnovers. We talk about all the offensive coordinators. A little bit of a disjointed week 1. Things a lot crisper in week 2. So what sorts of adjustments were you looking to make as a result?
Well, you know, really it's, as you said, with week 1 results, you don't know how good a team is compared to how bad a team is. I think the best example was the Washington Redskins against the Arizona Cardinals. You know, we saw that Washington handled Arizona. Well, was Washington that good or Arizona that bad? Last week's results with Indy beating Washington and Arizona losing again made that scenario clear. So there's a few teams still in the middle, but we certainly know that we have a few bottom rung teams, and we certainly know we have some powerhouse teams, especially one of those teams out in SoCal.
It's one of those things that's really difficult and challenging for me across really all pro sports. You know, I look at Major League Baseball and, you know, look, you've got 10 teams that are, you know, are playoff caliber teams, maybe 11 if you stretch it out a little bit. You've got several teams in various states of a rebuild that are just absolutely terrible, and 4 of them happen to reside in the division that our Cleveland Indians play in. We're kind of seeing those gaps in all of the major sports leagues now between the haves and the have-nots. We certainly see it in the NBA, and that's been a running theme in the NBA for a long time. But it feels like now we're starting to see it a little bit more in the NFL, where the really good teams really stand out, the really bad teams really stand out, and then it's almost a guessing game week to week to see how the teams in the middle tier wind up playing. It's a very high-variance environment with the majority of the league, but we've got, you know, highs and lows.
Well, you know, you guys talked about it earlier on the week. You know, the Minnesota Vikings are a 17-point favorite. And, you know, that situation in the NFL since the year 2000, 18 seasons, has only happened 17 times. So 18 years, 17 times. Once a year, you have a team that big of a favorite. Those teams, you talked about a 14-point spread. If you are a 17-point favorite in the NFL, you are only 6-11 against the spread. So those few points have made a difference.
And it's one of those things, too, where, I mean, we don't see 17-point favorites in week 3. I mean, you know, I know you ran the query, so maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong here. We see those a lot of times in December, where you've got, you know, rookie starting quarterbacks, you've got injuries that have mounted, you've got teams in must-win situations for the playoffs or whatever else. We generally don't see, you know, three-score favorites in the month of September. And, you know, we saw a double-digit favorite last week with New Orleans. We'll see more double-digit favorites as the season goes along. But it's just one of those things that I think you kind of look at it as the current state of the NFL. And, you know, we've got a lot of numbers of six or higher here this week in week three. I don't really remember that being the case all that often.
Well, looking at the query on the 17-point spreads, back in 2013, Seattle was a 19-point favorite to Jacksonville week three. There was one week four scenario back in 2002, and then everything else was week five or later. But as you said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12, 13 of the 17 were in double-digit weeks or higher. So you certainly are correct. When one team, you know, has given up on the season and they're injury and they're injury prone and they're in the third string offensive lineman, that has been traditionally the scenario. But, you know, there, like you said, it's very top heavy, and we're finding a few very, very poor teams this year.
I want to ask you specifically about one team here, and then we'll break down some of the games that I want to look at with you. The Kansas City Chiefs. You know, a lot of people looked at the Chiefs coming into the season and they got rid of Alex Smith, who, you know, got that label as a game manager. And, you know, a lot of people use a negative connotation with that, but he's a guy who took care of the football, won a lot of games. They get rid of him. You get this big unknown in Pat Mahomes. And it coincides with a Chiefs defense that is getting older, not particularly good. Eric Berry hasn't played the first two games, so they're already missing one of their top defensive players. And Kansas City has just gone out and outscored two different opponents. And Mahomes has looked like he's going to win the MVP and be the Super Bowl winning quarterback and, you know, have a bust in Canton someday with how he's played over these first 2 weeks. How do you evaluate a team like that? Because you look at this line against San Francisco here. Kansas City was a 4-point favorite. Mahomes looks great. Now they're a 6.5, 7-point favorite. You know, what do you do in a situation like that where you've got a quarterback that's just playing out of his mind right now on a team that is ultimately very flawed?
Well, you know, number one, credit to Kansas City, because last year during the draft, people said, what are you doing trading up for Mahomes? Credit to Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs. At the end of last year, they jettisoned their quarterback. They said Mahomes are our guy. So many times we question those people that make the moves. Kansas City hit it right on the head, at least this far. KC's a team that, yes, they're exciting. Yes, they put up 406 yards per game their first two games. But I look at them, those are big play teams. They only have 43 first downs in those first two games, averaging 22 a game. And I look at the Chiefs and I say, well, this is the worst defense in the NFL. Yes, they're scoring quick, so the other team gets on the field, but they're allowing 508 yards per game. Anytime I have a favorite that's allowing 508 yards per game, I'm going to tend to want to fade them. Why? Well, because the offense is going to go through its ups and downs. If your defense is giving up 508 yards per game, granted they were one of only three teams to start on the road each of the first 2 weeks, and granted they played decent offenses in the Chargers and Pittsburgh, but, you know, still giving up 33 first downs in each of the first 2 weeks, I don't think I've ever seen any NFL team give up 33 first downs in back-to-back games. So for me, if I'm not going to be on KC with that defense, and I'll find my spots to play against them.
And that's the thing. You know, I mean, when we talk about the NFL and we talk about so much public investment, and, you know, there is sharp involvement, obviously, in the NFL, but, you know, it's maybe a little bit more veiled because of the amount of public action that we see in the NFL betting market. You know, Kansas City is a team right now. Tyreek Hill can't be stopped. Mahomes can't be stopped. You know, we'll see if they get the running game going, if they really make a concerted effort here anytime soon to get that running game going, because you have to expect Mahomes to regress at least a little bit here as you go throughout the season. But this is that flashy, sexy, fantasy football kind of team. And those are teams that always get love, always have inflation. Teams like New England can overcome that, and they just cover numbers anyway, even though their lines are always a point, point and a half high, because the books know the first time they need New England will, you know, the first time in forever, basically, since, you know, Belichick and Brady had this dynasty. with Kansas City right now, the books are perfectly content needing the other side. So they'll just go ahead and inflate this number a little bit. And of course, we see action already here on Kansas City this week. So for you, for somebody who knows, you know, in the NFL, this truly is a bet numbers and not teams market for a lot of different people. And these lines are going to be so inflated with the Chiefs, with some of these other superstar teams that are out there. What do you do? At what point is kind of your point of resistance where you say, you know what, I just have to go against them here? I mean, a lot of people were against them last week with Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh obviously didn't come through there. Is this a week where you stand up against Kansas City, or will you kind of hope that that stock price just keeps going higher and higher?
Well, I would love to go against them this week. I just don't want to go against them with San Francisco. Yes, Garoppolo, you know, got the win against Detroit, but I'm not sold that Garoppolo going on the road and playing at Kansas City is a great spot for him for the San Francisco. So, again, I will line up to play against the Chiefs. And, in fact, I don't think I'll be on a situation where I'll play against or where I'll play on them. Listen, you've got outgained back-to-back games. So, you pulled the upset. You went on the road. You got outgained back-to-back games. You got the worst defense in all of football. You know, I think that we'll see what happens with San Francisco, but I can see them going to Denver and losing. Then they host Jacksonville, and then they go to New England. We may see 100 points scored in that New England game. I don't know. But, you know, those next three games coming up is a real wake-up call where I certainly, between those three situations, can see myself being an anti-Chiefs fan.
Well, and this is one of the things about the NFL, and I think I mentioned this in my opening line report yesterday, and this will be the last point we make on this game, and then we'll talk about the three games we intended to touch on. I'm not going to have any involvement in this game. I would love to play San Francisco, but I'm not going to do it. Opener at Arrowhead, great atmosphere. One of the true home field advantages left here in the NFL. I will not be against Kansas City this week. But as somebody who follows the NFL market closely, as somebody who's always thinking and planning ahead, I want Kansas City to win this game by 28 points. I want that perception to keep rising with this team. And that's kind of what you want to do. Even if it's a game that you don't have action on, even if it's a game that you're not invested in, pay attention to it. See what happens with the line. See what happens with the box score. See what happens with the final score, because you want to start circling some opportunities going forward. And that's exactly what you were talking about with Kansas City's schedule taking a pretty big step up here over the next 3 weeks. Is you want to be positioned to go against this team, and you hope that they keep doing what they're doing, maybe even to a higher degree, to set yourself up for some, you know, pretty good line value in those future matchups.
You know, and you also have to remember, you know, we talk about this all the time when you have new teams and new offenses and you don't have that team on film. Listen, the NFL didn't know what Pat Mahomes was going to do at quarterback. This is not the Kansas City Chiefs offense from last year that the Chargers prepped for. The Pittsburgh Steelers got to see one game on film against the Chargers, but I'll tell you what, San Francisco, Denver, Jacksonville, and New England now know the entire game plan. Those defensive coordinators can now plan for what Kansas City's doing this year with Mahomes under center, and that changes everything moving forward.
All right, let's take a look at game 301-302 here. The New York Jets and the Cleveland Browns. And the Browns are taking money here. Now, the sportsbooks have dug in at 3 for the most part. My bookie at 3.5 minus $1.20. So, they apparently had no problem moving off of the number of 3 and just kind of blowing right through it there. Rest of the market, 3 with extra juice on Cleveland. And this set up as a spot where I really wanted to play Cleveland. You've got Sam Darnold, back-to-back starts on short weeks. We had Miami with all 3 of our Super Contest cards this week. They do beat the Jets. So, you know, if the Jets had beaten Miami, this number probably opens 2, 2.5, something like that. But I think I got priced out of this one, Rolf. How about you?
I completely agree, Adam. My sentiments exactly. I thought I'd be on the Browns this week. But I'll tell you what, when you're 1-31 the last 2 years, and now you're 0-1-1 this year, an NFL team, a college team, it doesn't matter what team you're talking about. You have to relearn how to win games, and that's the Browns' problems. It takes a special team. It takes veterans. It takes people not making mistakes late in the game to win a game. That's what happens in the NFL. Games are close. The Browns are in that funk where they have not learned to win a game. Well, if you haven't learned to win a game, I certainly can't bet on a team to cover a game as a favorite. They've only been a favorite 5 times the last 4 years. 5 times in the last 4 years. So, again, I love the situation with Cleveland. I think their defense is legit, holding New Orleans to 275 yards and 18 first downs on the road last week. I think now we have film on Sam Darnold. We know what he's going to do. Yes, he had a great first week. Last week he was forced to throw from behind, threw for 300 yards, but, you know, he got sacked 3 times. We saw him lose the turnover battle, and I just think great spot for Cleveland, but I can't back him as a favorite in that role.
No, I can't, and I can't either. And the problem is there, again, are so many things working in their favor. You've got Darnold, a rookie quarterback, making his third start, going out on the road here to Cleveland where they are absolutely dying for a win. It's a Thursday night game in primetime. It'll be probably the loudest that building's been in quite some – well, maybe not with with the Steelers game, although, you know, it was kind of a tempered crowd with the really bad weather. So, you know, could be the loudest this place has been. This is the game for them that is circled, should be the winner, should be able to drink that Bud Light beer water from the victory fridge after the game. But I just I can't do it, man. I can't make this play. You know, and they harassed Drew Brees a little bit in that game. They've got Myles Garrett, who's an absolute stud. They've got defensive line depth that can go and make life hard for Darnold. Everything in this game points toward the Browns. And maybe you and I are just jaded because we are Browns fans. We've watched this basically since they returned in 99 that they've been a laughingstock. I just can't do it, man. I cannot. And I thought going into this week, this is going to be a super contest play for me. I'm going to have to put my card in early so I can take Cleveland. I'm a little bit relieved now at this point that I don't feel like I have to do that. But, man, what a hard bet to make. Even though everything lines up for the Browns, it's still hard to pull that trigger.
Yeah, and, you know, we talk about looking ahead and, you know, you talk about the Jets scenario with Darnold. That's another game where, you know, looking ahead to the Jets, oh, wow. They're at Cleveland this week on a short week, and then they go to Jacksonville next week. So not only are they going to Jacksonville off back-to-back road games, they're going to Jacksonville playing 3 road games in 4 weeks. So that's for another weekend that we'll talk about that next week. But, again, I agree with you. There's certain times that it's just not worth a force on a team because you think, well, it can't happen again. They're not that shell-shocked, you know, missed extra points and missed field goals and blocked field goals in the Pittsburgh game. But that's what happens. Again, a team, I say it all the time, a team needs to learn how to win before they learn how to cover.
And the last point I'll make about this game here is, you know, Tyrod Taylor didn't look great last week. 22 of 30 for 246, a touchdown and a pick, took 3 sacks, scrambled around a little bit. But, you know, the stats don't really tell the whole story there. The eye test, he didn't look particularly good, and he didn't look good in week one either. Now, the weather played a big factor in that, but a lot of timing issues, just a lot of things that didn't really seem to work out a whole lot. The one thing that intrigues me about maybe looking at the Jets side here, and I'm not going to do it, obviously, with everything I already talked about, but if Tyrod Taylor plays a bad first quarter, a bad first half here, we all know what's going to happen with this impatient fan base. They're going to want Baker Mayfield. And Hugh Jackson's not going to do it. Hugh Jackson's not going to have this job much longer, I don't think. But it's going to be a really interesting dynamic if Tyrod Taylor comes out, and let's say in the first half he's, you know, 8 of 15 for 115 yards with a touchdown and a couple picks or something like that, something really bad. You know, then what kind of happens with that crowd? How do they turn against this guy? It's going to be a really interesting and complex type of game, to say the least.
Yeah, you know, it's a game where obviously it's a total under 40. So, you know, that doesn't happen in the NFL very often now. But, you know, even though it's that low, I would still lean the under. But I think Taylor would have to have a horrific half, like throwing 3 picks in the first half. I'm not worried about incompletions because I don't think they are. But if he made some bad reads and threw like 3 picks, that's the only scenario I see where he might get yanked. Otherwise, I think, you know, you look at that as a whole. And as an organization, let's see, you tie Pittsburgh and you go to overtime against New Orleans, you're happy. You've shown improvement. You are a better team than last year. You've covered both games. You were in both games. You're making the step. So to me, I think, you know, you don't have those turnover machines that we set a record last year being minus 28 turnovers. In fact, you know, you won the turnover battle each of the first two games. So there is improvement, but, you know, it depends how long the owner and the fan base is going to say, well, improvement has to equal wins for us to be happy. And that I agree with you, is going to happen sooner than later.
All right, let's go to Sunday here. Let's go to game 475, 476 on the board. We touched on Washington a little bit. Great performance on the road in Arizona. We found out that doesn't mean as much because Arizona is absolutely god-awful. Then Washington comes home, loses as a six-point favorite to Indianapolis. Now they're getting three, minus 20 out there in the marketplace against the Green Bay Packers, who go on the road, gave up the lead in the fourth quarter. So, you know, kind of a complete flip of the script for what they did in week one. Aaron Rodgers, clearly not 100%. That was very, very obvious in that game. Still did everything that he needed to do to put Green Bay in position to win, but this is a guy who's less than 100%. Green Bay, minus three, plus money or even money out there market-wide on the road against Washington. How do you see this one, Rolf?
Well, you know, this is a spot where I would like Green Bay, but I don't like Green Bay because of Aaron Rodgers being banged up. I mean, you know, he had to play, and he played in the Chicago game in the second half for the great comeback. He played in the Minnesota game. He was 30 of 42. Wasn't the Aaron Rodgers throwing deep a lot? He was sacked four times. In fact, each of the first two games, Green Bay has had four sacks per game. That's not like them. You know, this is their first road game now, a completely different scenario than Aaron Rodgers leading them back against two division foes. So I don't think there's a tougher spot. You open up back-to-back home games against your two top division foes, and now you're playing a non-conference game on the road. Meanwhile, Washington's off a home loss, playing a second straight home game. You know, the thing about Washington is this. You know, they held Arizona to 213 yards and 14 first downs, but they held Indianapolis to 281 yards and 17 first downs. That is excellent, giving up those 21 points, you know, on a couple big plays. Other than that, their defense is number one in all of football. Again, 247 yards per game is pretty darn good. So I think this is another low-scoring game. I think this is a situation that if Green Bay does happen to get out to an early lead, they're going to run the ball. They're not going to want to risk Rodgers moving forward. And in Washington, you excuse me, you have a situation where, you know, we know Alex Smith had a dynamic pass game, not a dynamic pass game, but a very productive pass game in Kansas City because he always had the play action available to him. Well, when you have Adrian Peterson as your top running back and he's, you know, averaging under 4 yards per carry, you don't have that play action. No one is afraid of Adrian Peterson anymore. Remember, they drafted Geis out of LSU. He got hurt in the preseason. He's out for the year. So now they're going to their second and third options. That Washington is a different offense. This is a game that I look at from both scenarios, and I have a definite lean on the under.
One more NFL game I want to touch on here, and there are some very interesting trends that you've been tweeting about with regards to the Arizona Cardinals here this week. They are a six-point home underdog to the Chicago Bears on a short week with Mitch Trubisky working with a new coaching staff. This is one of those games where this line is clearly inflated, was four on the look-ahead. Chicago wins on Monday Night Football, goes up to six. Look, Arizona's been absolutely terrible, but this is a number that is too high. The question is, do you have the stones, do you have the cojones to play Arizona? As of now, I don't think that I do, but I know there's a pretty compelling case for doing it.
I don't either. And, you know, Arizona is off a shutout loss. Arizona is off one of the worst offensive performances in the history of the NFL. Not the 137 yards, but five first downs. People don't talk about getting shutout is one thing. Getting five first downs in a game is an entirely different scenario. And there are teams that were shut out in the NFL. Again, this is talking about Arizona. It's the 17th shutout since the 2015 season. So three seasons plus this year, there's been this 17 shutout. So about 5.5 a year, but the teams are 12-3-1. You got to remember, we talk about the NFL as parity from top to bottom. Yes, the parity has expanded a little bit with maybe the Rams being the best and Arizona being the worst, and we saw them match up last week, and the results were 34-0. But those teams that were shut out, excuse me, are 12-3-1 ATS. So a very positive 80% ATS mark in the last few years. Again, they are professionals. The NFL, the lines makers do tend to overreact when this team is shut out. But I think this Arizona team is, again, historically bad on offense with Bradford. And, you know, even though David Johnson's healthy, when you have no respect for a quarterback to throw deep, it doesn't matter that you have Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson, who would be all-stars on any other team you put them on. When your quarterback is Bradford, it just doesn't allow you the ability to do that. But I'll tell you what, does that mean I'm on Chicago? No. And I'll tell you why. They're only 2-13 straight up on the road the last 2.5 seasons. They've only been an away favorite once in 4 years, and they lost that game straight up. We talked about Cleveland learning how to win. Oh, yes, Trubisky is great. Yes, they have Khalil Mack. Yes, they beat Seattle. Well, they got outgained against Seattle. They got outgained against Green Bay. They're now going on the road. They haven't learned to win on the road. You have a young quarterback going on the road. I think another low-scoring game, and I can't lay the points with the Bears.
No, I can't either. And this is one of the things that's so frustrating about the NFL is you get these spots. You get this Cleveland spot. You get this Arizona spot. And it's still virtually impossible to make that play. And I know that there are going to be people out there that do take Arizona this week. And I'd be very curious to see what the pick distribution looks like in the Super Contest on Saturday between Chicago and Arizona. I would love to take Arizona here. Because knowing what we know about the NFL, this is an absolute 100% play-on spot for Arizona, but the team is just that bad. And that's why, you know, like I said, I mentioned earlier the expression a lot of people use about betting numbers and not teams. This number says to bet Arizona, but you have to be mindful of the team here, and this team just isn't good enough to trust. I don't know how many points I would need to take them here. I don't even know if 7.5 would do it. Sure, 6 isn't going to.
Well, you know, we could say this about Arizona, that it's only been 2 weeks, but they are number 30 in offense and number 32 on defense. Those two numbers together aren't very good. So, you know, there's times that you just have to wait. There's times that there's teams you want to play against, and it's like, damn, I can't do it this week, and damn, I can't do it again. But sometimes not falling for the trap of Chicago or not falling, you know, on the trap on the Browns, we'll see what happens, but leaving a game off the table is okay, guys. If you split those two games, you're saving yourself 10% juice by not playing them. It's always better to leave a winner off the table than it is to put a loser on it. So if the situations don't fall, don't press it. Just wait for your scenarios to happen and wait another game or another week.
And the last thing I'll mention about this game, I saw, I believe it was on RotoWorld, that Steve Wilks and the Arizona coaching staff wants to put David Johnson in the slot a little bit more, try and get him some creative touches that way, because this Cardinals offensive line hasn't played very well either. So, you know, now you're taking a guy out of his element, putting him in a different kind of place, giving him more looks in the slot. I don't know if Bradford can get him the ball. I don't know what kind of separation he can get playing in the slot against the slot corner, as opposed to being shadowed by a linebacker. So for Arizona, they seem completely mystified right now with what to do. And, you know, it's very hard to back a team in that situation as well. So we'll transition over to the college football side of things here now. And, you know, Rolf, we talked about this last week, that you don't really make any adjustments to your power ratings through 2 weeks. You made some differences heading into week three. I presume you made a lot of adjustments here in week four.
Yeah, I do. But I'll tell you what, again, we get into the situation now where I only use my power ratings, I said, maybe 20, 25, 30% of the time. So even though I have my power ratings, at this point, 3 weeks in, I'm basically making the line just off my head with what I see looking at the numbers. Then I look at what my power rating numbers are and I compare the two. So again, I'm not a real big power ratings number, and because basically any situation can change up to 6 or 7 points for me. So why write down a power rating number and then my mind change at 7 points because of the situation they're in? So you know, while I still have them and I use them as a guide, at this point on moving forward, it really isn't something I do look at. What I do look at is, and I'll have this up starting next week for free at Wager Talk. You know, we're going to talk about strength of schedule a little bit, and people talk about good offenses and good defenses, but no one talks about yards per game. I mean, the most important stat isn't how good your offense is or how good your defense is. It's by how many yards per game do you outgain your opponent. So starting next week, I have a chart, and it's simple. It's yards per game, points per game, turnovers, and strength of schedule for each team. It sounds like a simple chart, but it's very productive when you look at two teams, let's say two teams that are equal and they're both plus 150 yards per game. One team played the number 20 schedule. One team played the 80 schedule. Well, which one's better? Likewise, if you have two teams that are playing the number 50 and number 55 schedule, and one is plus 200 yards per game and one is plus 4 yards per game, which one is better? So there's a couple different ways to compare those, either by the yards per game and then looking at the sliding scale of strength of schedule, or vice versa, looking at the strength of schedule and then comparing the yards per game. But when it gets to college football and we get into this part of the schedule, and you have a lot of teams that played some very good schedules and a lot of teams that played some very weak schedules, I think it's very, very important to know that fact. And, you know, I'm not a huge Sagarin fan. I mean, he puts up great numbers on a lot of things, but early in the year, his numbers are so related to last year's results. But I do really like his strength of schedule, because he puts a college football strength of schedule in his projections, and in the strength of schedule, it adds the strength of the FCS games. Since he ranks FCS games, if you play Savannah State, that's so much different than playing Northern Iowa or North Dakota State. You know, North Dakota State's probably better than 30 FBS teams, where a Savannah State or a bottom FCS program is horrendous. So, again, go to USA Today or just Google Sagarin, and I do really like his strength of schedule numbers for college football.
Yeah, and I'm glad I thought to talk about that kind of almost at the last minute here, and I'm glad that you've got strength of schedule stuff in front of you, and I knew that I could do that with you because you do a very good job tracking, you know, the quality of competition that teams have played here, and I think it's a very important point to bring up as we get into week four, because a lot of teams are playing that final non-conference game, or a lot of teams are opening up conference play because you've got the 9-game conference schedules now in several of the different leagues. So I did want to make sure I touched on that a little bit here on today's show, because, you know, I always think about it in the context of Baylor, a Baylor team that was pretty strong there under Art Briles, lots of, you know, good offensive seasons, but their non-conference schedules were almost always a joke. And then they would get into a game against somebody really good. You'd have an inflated perception or inflated number, and they'd wind up, you know, falling short or maybe surprising every now and then. But still, you want to keep in mind the quality of competition that teams have played. So as we get into week four here, Rolf, let's kind of talk about the extremes a little bit here. Who are some of those teams that have just played absolutely terrible schedules and are maybe stepping up in class a little bit here this week?
Well, you know, Baylor is one of those teams. You know, you brought it up on your quick email to me. Hey, you know, let's talk Baylor and strength of schedule. You know, Baylor has only played Abilene Christian, UTSA, and then they played a good Duke team. They played one decent team, and it was at home. So Baylor actually is number 105 of the 130 FBS teams this week. So that doesn't automatically mean you should fade them. Why? Well, because their opponent, Kansas, has played the number 113 schedule. They've actually played a lesser schedule than Baylor. Oh, yeah, and by the way, just a note for those people looking at this Baylor and Kansas game, Kansas has won back-to-back games for the first time since, I think, I don't know, 2008. They beat FBS teams. Kansas was plus 6 turnovers each of those last 2 weeks. We're not really talking about this game, but it's certainly a spot where I like Baylor off Kansas with two huge turnover margin games getting back-to-back wins. Top of the toughest schedule so far this year, Iowa State, SMU, UCLA, USC, and LSU. Well, what does that tell us? Well, we saw Iowa State with a backup quarterback hang with Oklahoma. That's a team you have to look at moving forward. SMU played a couple tough games. UCLA, well, we saw Chip Kelly's new offense not working, using a couple different quarterbacks. Yes, he's played some tough schedule, but that's not the new, that's not the kind of schedule you want if you're a new head coach bringing in a brand new difficult offense, playing the third toughest schedule. USC, of course, lost at Stanford and at Texas. That put them up there. So, you know, really the surprise team is LSU, that's played the fifth toughest schedule, and BYU, which has played the eighth toughest schedule. Both of those teams pulling multiple upsets. Both of those teams now highly ranked because of what they've done. And hats off to them playing two of the toughest schedules out there.
Where do you have Ball State? I know Ball State beat Central Connecticut State in game one. Then they played Notre Dame and Indiana, both on the road. I think Ball State's probably my favorite play this week. I have a much, much larger line based on my power ratings against Western Kentucky. It feels like the Cardinals are in a pretty good spot here this week, given that they've faced, you know, Notre Dame and then another Power 5 team last week.
I agree with you. Ball State has played the number 27th schedule. And these numbers here are just Sagarin. So I'm quoting Jeff Sagarin and his numbers, which can be found at USA Today. Later on, when we get to weeks 4 and 5, I do a compilation of like 3 sites that I use, and I take the average of both, and it just gives me a little better feel of where they are. But, you know, you look at Western Kentucky, they're a team that, you know, had a very close game against Louisville. And those are the kind of games where you get value. Well, heck, Western Kentucky only lost by 3 at Louisville. And, you know, but that same Western Kentucky lost to Maine the week before at home. So, you know, one game does not dictate that you're going to be a better team. Now you're playing back-to-back road games. You're off a disappointing game. You're 0-3 on the year. You've lost 2 games by a total of 6 points, and you're playing a Ball State team that's played very, very difficult competition and is by far the better team on the field.
All right, so we touched on some of the stronger schedules here, and a lot of blue blood types of teams there, including a team like LSU getting up there into the top, and of course they beat Miami and Auburn. So, excuse me, LSU much, much better than we anticipated here so far this season. How about the bottom rung? How about the teams that have played the worst opposing strength of schedules here so far?
Well, the team that's played the weakest schedule so far is Southern Miss. Their lineup includes Jacksonville State and UL Monroe. They, of course, had the App State game postponed, and now they're playing Rice. SMU has played the number 130 schedule of the FBS teams. Rice is number 84. Next up is another team that got a game canceled, UCF. UCF played the 129th schedule, and FAU played the number 60. Of course, FAU started the season at Oklahoma. And here's the biggest FBS or Power 5 matchup this week. Oregon's played the number 128 schedule, and Stanford has played the number 57. So this is a situation, well, we don't know how good Oregon is under Cristobal with this offense. You know, I had Oregon a few weeks ago against Bowling Green, and I can tell you this. They were up. They were laying 40 points to Bowling Green. They were up 34 points in the fourth quarter. They had their starters in, and he threw a 50-yard touchdown pass to cover that game. Well, that doesn't strike me as a team that is that impressive that has their starters in against one of the worst teams in the FBS, playing in the fourth quarter to cover. Is he making his alumni happy? Probably. Is he making, you know, his fans happy? Probably. But again, it's a team that's played absolutely nobody through 3 weeks. And Stanford has, of course, played San Diego State and USC, puts them at the number 57 schedule. The others at the bottom are Tennessee at 127, Cincinnati at 119, and then Kansas and Baylor, again, we talked about, number 113 and number 105. The biggest Power 5 matchup with the teams that have played the least competition.
All right, let's hit on a few games here. And again, I think strength of schedule, very, very important. So, Rolf, I don't know if you post that strength of schedule in your Gridiron Guide or in one of the other newsletter-type PDF things that you send out. But again, if you want to, you can certainly check Sagarin as well and look at some of those strength of schedule metrics. And I know that we're not talking college basketball yet because we're still several weeks away from that starting. But that's a big betting angle for you when it comes to college basketball, looking at strength of schedule and comparing that in games once we get enough of a sample size.
Well, you know, absolutely. You know, everything's in proportion. The NFL there has 32 teams, so your top to bottom is going to be a much smaller variance. College football, the FBS program, has 130 teams. Top to bottom is going to be much bigger. college football division, college basketball division one, 351 teams. So again, the variance is even bigger. So anytime you have 351 teams from top to bottom, you're going to have huge swings. So comparing the rebounding, the points per game against the strength of schedule played, I think it's mandatory early in the year. But then likewise, just to get way ahead of ourselves, you also have to be able to flip the switch. When it gets to conference play, even in college football, when it gets to conference play, only look at those conference stats. I mean, one example, just to get off the subject a little bit, is the Sun Belt. When the Sun Belt's in their second or third game of the season, you have to throw away year-to-date stats because of who people played, because of cancellations of some games, and start looking at only conference stats when you're comparing those two teams because the variance is so great.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, some of those teams play FCS teams because they want to get their wins. They want to get to bowl eligibility. Other athletic departments down there in the Sun Belt, they need to play SEC teams, kind of refill the coffers a little bit, get some of those big guarantees to go out there and get their asses kicked. You know, it's just the nature of the beast in college football here. And, of course, you know, Akron, I mean, they had a nice payday to go and beat Northwestern on the road last week. So, you know, hey, sometimes it doesn't work out for those Power 5 teams, but more often than not, they're going to win those games, probably win them comfortably. And with a sample size of 12 games in college football, or 13, depending on the conference and the team, you know, one or two games like that where you got to go get a paycheck from somebody can really skew those numbers. So that's definitely an excellent point there from you, Rolf. How about we look at some of these games here for week four of college football? We'll start with game 313-314 because this is a pretty interesting game here. You're not going to hear too many shows talking about NC State on the road at Marshall. But both of these teams having their games canceled last week, NC State was steamed against big time with West Virginia coming to town. Marshall was supposed to play South Carolina. That one got canceled with the Gamecocks really needing a bounce back effort after getting blown out by Georgia. Now you're in Huntington. NC State goes out on the road. This number opened 6.5. It's come down to pretty much 5.5 market wide.
Yeah, I still lean with NC State. You know, Marshall, you go to Marshall and, you know, you of course have all the We Are Marshall scenarios, but it can be as tough to play at it as some ACC schools. You know, it's a very small environment, but it is very loud. But you look at what Marshall's done this year, and they're just a team that, you know, they went to Miami of Ohio. They got outgained against Miami, Ohio. They won that game. And then they played Eastern Kentucky. So we don't know what we're getting out of them, but we're getting a middle-of-the-road CUSA team. When you have NC State and they play James Madison and Georgia State, yes, they beat them both. They actually struggled against Madison, only having a 27-yard edge. But, of course, they have Ryan Finley. You have the experienced quarterback. You have some great receivers that you have multiple weapons at receivers that could start on other ACC teams. You have a situation where this is their only road game in their first 6 weeks of the year, so you can prep for that one road game. You have the better team with rest and the better coaching staff, I completely believe, have the advantage when you have that bye. And because NC State, I think the NC State situation benefits not playing last week because they would have had West Virginia. The DBs would have been running around trying to chase West Virginia. You know, what Marshall did against South Carolina wouldn't have mattered, but edge here to NC State with the game being canceled last week, and I think having an experienced quarterback here gets him enough of an edge.
Let me ask you about this here. From an NC State standpoint, they host Virginia next week, so they open up conference play. Same thing for Marshall, but they're on the road at Western Kentucky. That's a game that they, you know, will be a comfortable road favorite in. Virginia much better than anticipated. Bryce Perkins doing a great job at quarterback. Bronco Mendenhall doing a good job with that Cavaliers program. What about that factor here this week where you've got several teams playing their final non-conference game with a look ahead to the conference opener next week? We saw Penn State, for example, in that situation against Kent State last week, but they were going on the road to Illinois, completely crushed Kent State. They're a 4-touchdown favorite against Illinois this week. They knew they'd be a comfortable favorite. What about those types of scenarios where it's the last non-conference game, your conference opener's on deck? Does that concern you?
Well, each team is different and each situation's different. You know, the Penn State game, Penn State played much better than I thought. I would have leaned with Kent State, looking at how Kent State played the week before. But I don't think NC State is in that scenario this week because they prepped for West Virginia at the beginning of the week. You know, yes, they knew the hurricane was coming. They didn't know if they were going to move the game. They didn't know if they were going to play. So they went through their normal process. It wasn't like they had a bye week and the kids got a couple days off. They practiced against West Virginia early in the week. Then comes Tuesday, Wednesday, they decide they're going to cancel the game. They probably got a day off or two, and then they start their preparations again. But it's a little bit different. I don't think you have that same look ahead because you were supposed to play a conference game, and you have a conference game on deck.
All right, I wanted to talk about this game with you here. Game 323-324, Boston College and Purdue. There's a ton to unpack about this game. The first thing that stands out to me is Boston College is a team that made a pretty significant jump in my power ratings here from last week. They're a top 20 team for me now. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit. Maybe I've overvalued them a little bit, but they're a top 20 team in my power ratings now based on what they've done, because that preseason hype appears to be justified. Then you look at this game here against Purdue this week. Boston College is virtually power rated the same as Missouri was, because this line is pretty much in the exact same spot where that game was lined. That seems a little bit strange to me. Maybe Purdue got a little bit of love last week because the offense got going, but this is a pretty mystifying line, I think, where something feels off. Something just doesn't feel right about where this number is sitting to me.
Well, I mean, you look at Purdue and you look at their individual games. They outgained Northwestern at home. They outgained Eastern Michigan at home. They outgained Missouri at home. Oh, but what happened? They lost by 4. They lost by 1. They lost by 3. You're 0-3. You lost 3 games by a total of 8 points, yet you outgained all 3 foes. So, you know, Purdue is really snake bit. I expected some regression from Purdue. But, you know, they've had some tough losses. You have a team that in the previous 4 years before Jeff Brohm came over, you know, had a total of 9 wins. And then last year they get to 7 wins. And anytime you have a team making that big of a jump, you expect them to come back a little bit. You get some fortunate breaks. But losing those 3 home games the way they did is surprising. You know, I look at Boston College and I completely agree with you. I would say that, you know, people are going to say Clemson has the better scenario because they have, you know, a more experienced quarterback. But you could put BC's quarterback, Anthony Brown, and BC's running back, A.J. Dillon, on any ACC team, and they may be the best quarterback running back duo there is. Now, I may be drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit, and there's probably a better scenario out there. You know, you look at Florida with, you know, with the quarterback and the running back, and yes, they're probably better, but the way they're playing right now, I say they have the best quarterback running back combo in the country. AJ Dillon's averaging 9.5 yards per carry. And he was a stud last year, you know, and you have Anthony Brown now, who's now another year more experienced. He has a 4-0 ratio. Yeah. He's not throwing the ball a lot, but that's because they've also played 3 guys, because they crushed UMass and they crushed Holy Cross. 3 different quarterbacks have played. Those 3 quarterbacks have combined for an 8-0 ratio. Dillon will obviously be the man now. It is tough to do the back-to-back road games. They were at Wake Forest. They were in a battle last week. They won by 7. They only covered by 12. Now playing the non-conference game, but they do have Temple on deck at home, so they don't have a conference game in the offing. I think Purdue right now has so much pressure on them. This is win or the season's over. I mean, if you start the season 0-4 in your with 1 conference game and 3 non-conference opponents, you know, what do you do? You know, Blau and Sindelar have switched back and forth at quarterbacks. Combined, they only have a 5-4 ratio. The offense doesn't seem to be taking the progress in the second year you expect. So I won't be on this game, but if I had to pick a side, I think BC can get a lead. I think BC's rush attack can be the most dominating unit on the field. Therefore, I give them the edge.
Well, and like you said, for Purdue, I mean, you know, starting 0-4 is very problematic, because you play Ohio State this year in crossover action. You also play Michigan State on the road in East Lansing. That's a back-to-back for you. And you also, of course, get Wisconsin. So if you start 0-4, you're probably going to lose to Ohio State. You're probably going to lose at Michigan State. You probably lose to Wisconsin. That's 5-7 right there. There goes your bowl eligibility. So this is a really big game for Purdue. It's such a strange spot for Boston College, though. You open conference play with a road conference win. Now you play back-to-back non-conference games before getting back into conference on October 6th. So it's a very weird spot for Boston College here. Well, a line I'll certainly be watching. My number on this game is Purdue +8. So I'm a little bit off from the market based on the adjustments that I made to Boston College. But again, a very tricky spot, really for both of those teams, I would say, in that matchup. All right, we've been talked a little bit about the Stanford-Oregon game already with regards to the big strength of schedule discrepancy between the two teams. Is there anything you want to add on that game now that we see, you know, we've seen some pretty interesting line movement here for that matchup. And you know, it's one of those things where this line's kind of seesawed back and forth. Oregon opened a favorite. Stanford's a 2-point favorite now. Is this just a strength of schedule type of thing, or do you feel like, you know, this move could be the right side?
You know, I don't know. This is a game that I've gone back and forth. My numbers, I have Oregon as a 3-point favorite. So my numbers say Oregon. But again, this is a situation that you don't know if your number's right or not. Playing Bowling Green, Portland State, and San Jose State, well, 90 teams, well, 80 teams in the FBS are going to beat all three of those anyway. So how good are you? Again, we don't know. San Diego, Stanford, at least we know. Beating San Diego State by 21, very impressive. The game wasn't that close. Beating USC, we saw Daniels, the freshman for USC, making his first road start. Well, that's difficult for anyone to do. They held USC to 332 yards. And then UC Davis last week, they only put up 351 yards. They sat Bryce Love. They were waiting for the Oregon game, you know, and they just, they did what they had to. They got out to a lead. They ran the ball. There was no way they were worried about that game. So, you know, you have the situation where you Stanford's much better this year to date with who they've played and what they've done. Oregon's much better statistically because who they've played. Although my numbers say Oregon, it's not a game I'll be on just because there's better games where I have a better feel for both teams, except versus this one where I only have a feel for Stanford, not knowing what to expect out of the Ducks.
Yeah, I've got this game virtually a pick 'em. I've got Oregon minus half a point here in this one. So this won't be a game that I'm probably all that interested in either because, you know, the beautiful thing about the college football board is that there are a lot of games. So, you know, you're not forced into playing anything. And that's important because this is a primetime premier matchup. It's on TV. You're going to watch it. But just because you're going to watch it doesn't mean you have to bet on it. If you don't have an edge, don't do it. Game 405-406 here, Texas A&M and Alabama. I think you and I are going to have the same sentiments about this one. Alabama, a 27-point favorite now. This is a 3:30 CBS game on Saturday. My thoughts on this game, Rolf, and I have a feeling you're going to echo what I'm about to say. I've got line value on Texas A&M, but I don't know if I want to step in front of Alabama.
Ditto. You know, I would have been on old. I wasn't on Ole Miss. If I had to rank last week's plays, I would have say I would probably have Ole Miss like my 15th play. You know, I gave out six plays. Those my top six ended up being my plays. But Ole Miss was in the mix where, you know, I thought about using him. I looked at him and I, you know, I decided not to at the end. And, you know, what happens? Well, you go to Ole Miss and Ole Miss scores first. You think Ole Miss has the momentum. And then 62 points later, Alabama's winning by 55. They just look so good. I mean, you know, with Tua in there, it just has opened up the offense so much. I mean, you have Jerry Jeudy averaging 26 yards per catch. Devontae Smith averaging 20 yards per catch. Jalen Waddle, only a couple catches, but averaging 20 yards per catch. And you played Louisville at a neutral, and you went to Ole Miss. And you played one of the best teams in the Sun Belt. Okay, Alabama has a top 10, top 15 schedule right now, and they're still plus 242 yards per game, winning by an average of 48 yards per game. You know, on the flip side, Jimbo Fisher probably can thank Alabama because, you know, last year Jimbo Fisher and Florida State opened up against Alabama. Alabama knocked out Francois in the first game. That led to Jimbo Fisher wanting to leave Florida State, and that led A&M to opening up the coffers to Fisher. So really, maybe he'll give Saban a rose when they shake hands at the beginning. Thank you for my $70 million deal. But, you know, A&M looked great against Clemson. I mean, they were in the game. A&M had a 88-yard edge against Clemson. A&M had a 25-14 first down against one of the best defenses in the country. Problem is, that 12th man is a powerful tool when you're playing in College Station. Now you're going to play Alabama for the Alabama's SEC home opener, and Alabama only has Louisiana, only has ULL on deck. So, again, the numbers clearly say A&M. A&M impressed me versus Clemson, but that was at home. But I can't step in front of the Tide right now.
I'm hoping to get a 28 here. I'm going to end up playing the 27 anyway because I'm an idiot and I don't like money. But this is one of those spots where I could very easily see me going, well, I got a great bet. I've got a lot of value for my power ratings. And then Alabama wins the game by 40, like 49-7 or something silly. And, you know, then I power rate Alabama like 102 on my scale that goes up to 100 and then, you know, see what happens the rest of the year. So it's just,
you know,
one of those things.
Perhaps one thing, if you're looking at Bama, if you're looking at A&M, you know, Bama historically has been a slow starter in the first half. The problem is this year, first quarters, 14-0 against Louisville, 19-0 against Arkansas, and 28-7 against Miss. So a whole different scenario. This is a different Bama team. But Bama historically, I used to bet against Bama the first half, even the last few years, because they were always such a slow starter. Then their talent and their physicality took over in the second half. But again, this year, even that's off the board because of the dynamic offense.
All right, let's get into our pick six segment here. This will be how we wrap up the segment here. Six games, rapid fire fashion. Rolf has no idea what these games are until I mention them. So just quick bullet point thoughts on these matchups. Let's start Friday night here. Had some listener requests to talk some more about this game. Game 309-310, Washington State at USC. Trojans 3.5-point home favorite.
You know what? Mike Leach at his press conference said his offense is finally going. And to be honest with you, Helton's on the hot seat. You still have a freshman quarterback. I would lean with Washington State. USC 4-14 against the spread the last 18 games.
All right, let's go to game 337-338 here. Clemson on the road to take on Georgia Tech. Second straight week facing an option for the Tigers. They're a 17-point favorite here.
Yeah, and Georgia Tech, teams have slowed Georgia Tech this year. You know, I was against Clemson last week in a situation with my team from the Sun Belt, Georgia Southern, who got me the cover barely. But I think Clemson gets it done this week. You know, one thing to be concerned about, though, with Clemson's offense as they continue to rotate quarterbacks, they are 0-3 against the spread, and the offense has not been able to get that momentum building. They have not got that offense building momentum because he switched quarterbacks back and forth. We'll see what happens with conference play.
All right, it's going to be game 345-346 here, game we haven't touched on yet this week. Nevada on the road to take on Toledo. The Rockets laying 10.
You know, this is a game that, you know, I think Toledo was so hyped for the Miami game, and they were – So many bad things happened early, you know, with the sacks. You look at the Miami game and you look at the score 49-24, you think they got blown out. Well, they didn't get blown out. The game just got out of hand early. So now you have Toledo in the glass bowl off a loss. Nevada had a, 31-7 lead, and they had to block a field goal in extras. I've gone back and forth. I would say right now I would back nobody in this game. This is a game where I've had a toss up, where Nevada has a tough situation. They went to Vanderbilt. They came back. They played Oregon State. Now they're traveling back east again. But I just don't have the faith in the Toledo offense to get margin against the Nevada team that has a very good offense with Gangi a quarterback.
Yeah, and I watched that Toledo-Miami game because I did take Miami in that one. I got them 9.5 on the Bet Online opener. But Toledo's passing game looked so – I mean, that kid, I know he's not experienced, but – he was throwing ducks. I mean, they were complete wobblers. There was no ass behind any of those throws for that Toledo passing game. That worries me covering a big number. But Nevada making the long trip again after going to Nashville. Now they go to Toledo, 9 a.m. kickoff for them. It's hard not to like Toledo in that spot. But again, running away and hiding, as you mentioned, not something that looks easy for them. Let's hit on a couple of SEC games here. How about game 357-358, Florida laying 4.5 on the road against Tennessee?
Well, Florida got me a big winner last week, and I would back them again. I think that right now, you know, both teams have played weak schedules. Tennessee's played the number 127 schedule, so what do we get out of them? We really don't know. But I think Florida made a big statement in Colorado State, proving that at least they've made the step up where they're not going to embarrass themselves. Of course, you have the revenge from last year. In this game, this was the Hail Mary game at the end of the game. And but all said and done, Florida is my number as far as the power ratings go. The numbers come down 1 point from the opener, giving me a little more value. I would have to back the Gators.
All right, one spot down on the board here, 359-360, Mississippi State on the road against Kentucky. The Bulldogs are laying 10 in Lexington.
You know, Kentucky's played very well. I've been impressed with what they've done. You know, obviously they went to Florida. They broke their streak. So in a letdown situation last week, or what should have been a letdown situation, hey, they did exactly what they were supposed to do. They beat Murray State by 38 points, putting up 528 yards. You know, Snell and Wilson are a powerful duo for Kentucky. They're the kind of team that can slow the pace of the game. They're rushing combined for 6.5 yards per carry. But I like this Mississippi State team. I think they are set. I didn't think they would have the offense coming over from Penn State. Of course, Penn State's OC is now their head coach, and he brought basically the same offense as Penn State runs. But both of these teams in the SEC are probably my biggest movers up in the conference. And until someone beats Mississippi State or until they look bad, I am going to back the Bulldogs.
All right, let's go to game 383-384 here. You talk about a lot of situational and technical handicapping. I know those are two things that you really like to do here. Louisiana Tech on the road in Baton Rouge against LSU. This number is down from 22 to 20. You agree with that move? Would you take the Bulldogs here?
I do. I just think the LSU spot is too big. You know, you had the Miami of Florida spot in the opener, and did they let down against Southeast Louisiana? You wouldn't think they did because they won 31-0. But the game was closer. They only had an 81-yard edge. They only had 335 yards, as often happens. Turnovers are the edge. We talked about LSU playing one of the toughest schedules and being 3-0. Well, part of the reason is they were plus 2 turnovers against Miami. They were plus 3 turnovers against Louisiana. They were plus 2 turnovers against Auburn. I think being in the Auburn upset and having Ole Miss coming to town next week, this is the spot where we see the offense come back to fruition. And listen, Joey Burrow still completing only 46%. Yes, they put up 22 points and 370 yards against one of the best defenses in the country on the road. But Joey Burrow was 15 of 35 for 249. There were a couple long passes that he made. If you're playing Louisiana Tech and you got Ole Miss, you're not forcing those long passes. You're happy running the ball. You're happy slowing the clock. I think points are a bonus here.
All right, one more big game here. We'll go to the Big Ten West for this one. Wisconsin, 3.5-point favorites on the road in Iowa City against the Hawkeyes.
Boy, you know, Wisconsin is a team that I've had wrong a few times already this year. Just not, you know, it's not the same offensive line we're accustomed to. You would think with three first-team, all Big Ten offensive linemen coming back, you'd be better than 6.1 yards per carry when you played Western Kentucky, New Mexico, and BYU. I'm concerned about, you know, Honeybrook just does not look like a good quarterback. Yes, he's completed 63%, but, you know, there are a lot of dunk passes and a couple passes that were short passes that A.J. Taylor broke for long runs. He's got a 3-2 ratio. The Iowa team, you know what you're going to get at home. You're going to get a a field goal battle 15-12 game, I'll pass as far as the side goes, but I haven't a definite opinion on the under in this.
Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper from WagerTalk.com. What do you got going on over at the website right now, Rolf?
Well, you know, if they just go to WagerTalk.com and go to the capper profiles, go to the Cal Sports page, all my downloads are free. Remember, look where the Superbook opened up these Game of the Year lines. Each week it has the five or six games they opened with angles and what the opening lines were. If you're a baseball fan, the First Pitch newsletter's up there daily. And later today, you can get the Gridiron Guide. It's a free college football stat and log sheet. You're getting a full page per team with side and over under situational angles as well. So WagerTalk.com and then the Cal Sports homepage.
You can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, WagerTalk.com. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much, brother. Talk to you again next week.
Thanks, bud. Talk to you next Tuesday.
Always fun there to chat with Rolf Michaels. A lot of smart insight and analysis there on both the NFL and college football. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll be joined by Brian Leonard, professional handicapper from WagerTalk.com. Still waiting to hear from Wes Reynolds. We'll probably wind up with him on the show tomorrow, but if not, maybe he'll do the Super Contest segment with me on Friday. Thursday, Brad Powers and Tony George. Friday, Super Contest segment and Brent from DSI Sportsbook. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.